Welcome to Students Incorporated. I'm your host, Mr. Jason. Join me weekly as my team and I produce content that's informative, positive, fun, and uplifting. This podcast is created and produced with the help of students from the International Community School of Bangkok. Hello and welcome back to the show. We have an exciting and informative episode for you again. In the first segment, I'm joined by Mia, Frank, Premi, and Joseph, and they'll be diving into a topic that can completely change the way you think about work. So, what's your work style? Are you an I-shaped, T-shaped, V-shaped, or an M-shaped style of worker? We'll break down these four work style types and hopefully help you discover where you fit and how you can maximize your strengths. Then, don't go anywhere because part four of Legends of the Yucatan is here. The stakes are higher than ever as our heroes uncover shocking secrets and face unexpected dangers. Will they crack the mystery in time? Stick around to find out. But first, let's hear our quote of the day and get some headline news.
Our quote of the day comes from Stephen R. Covey, an American author and an educator. He famously stated, "Strength lies in differences, not similarities." The quote itself is as self-explanatory, as diversity is the base of all nations. And as diverse perspectives come together, they make communities stronger and more dynamic. Different cultures, experiences, and ways of thinking bring fresh ideas and help us grow. Without diversity, things can get stuck in the same old patterns. This quote is a great reminder that real strength comes from embracing what makes us unique, whether it's in school, work, or everyday life. Learning from different people helps us see new perspectives and find better solutions. At the end of the day, it's our differences that pushes us forward and makes the world a more interesting and connected place. And that's our quote of the day. Now on to some headline news with Mia.
Thank you for our quote of the day, Frank. Now, as for the news today, let's talk about three new ways a person can work instead of a traditional take on employment. Our first method would be job crafting. Now, this self-initiated process allows employees to reshape their job roles to better align with personal strengths and interests. Now, by proactively adjusting tasks, relationships, and perceptions of their work, individuals can enhance job satisfaction and performance. For example, an employee might take on additional responsibilities that match their skills or collaborate with different teams to diversify their experience. Our next one is intrapreneurship. Encouraging employees to act as entrepreneurs within the organization fosters innovation and creativity. Intrapreneurs take the initiative to develop new products, services, or processes, driving the company forward while operating within its framework. Companies like 3M have successfully implemented this approach, leading to groundbreaking products like the Post-it note. Finally, we have activity-based working, or ABW. ABW is a strategic framework that provides employees with a variety of work settings tailored to different tasks and activities. Instead of assigning fixed desks, organizations offer spaces designed for collaboration, focused work, or meetings, allowing employees to choose environments that best suit their current activities. This approach enhances productivity and engagement by catering to diverse work styles and promoting flexibility. And that ends our headline news for this episode.
Thank you for the quote and headline news. Now let's jump into the topic of work styles and shapes. Each of these represents a different approach to skills, expertise, and collaboration in the workplace. There are actually multiple shapes, but we are only going to focus on the four main types, which are I, T, V, and M. However, if you do your own research, you may discover pie shape and E shape as well. To help break it all down, I've got Mia, Frank, Premi, and Joseph in the studio. Mia, go ahead and get us started.
I'm really excited about today's topic because I feel like we hear a lot about what kind of worker companies want, but we don't always think about, hey, how do we work best and what our individual work styles are? And it's never too early to really start figuring this out, especially with some of us going to university in 5 months.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, we all have strengths, but understanding these different styles can help us figure out what we're good at and how we can improve.
I love that. And also, I feel like knowing our work style can also help us work better with others as well. And if we understand our own strengths and how our teammates operate, we can build stronger and more effective teams.
Oh, and let's be honest, some of these shapes fit us better than others. I don't have a work style, but I wonder if I might be a mix of couple.
That's a great point, Joseph. People aren't just one single shape for the rest of their life. They can evolve or even have traits from multiple styles. So let's get into it and explore what these styles mean, their strengths and weaknesses, and how to make the most of them. First up, let's talk about the I-shaped working style. Premi, can you take this one?
Yes, I can. So I-shaped employees are those who are highly specialized in one area. Think of the letter I, like the shape and the structure of the letter I. It is just this one vertical straight line. And so just like their expertise, this area of expertise that they have is very in-depth, but there is very little breadth.
Yeah, so I-shaped people, they spend, you know, a lot of years mastering one specific skill. Like, for example, an engineer who only works on aerospace technology, or say a lawyer who only deals with intellectual property law.
That level of expertise is so valuable. I mean, when you need a brain surgeon, you want someone who has focused only on brain surgery, not someone who's done a little bit of everything, right?
Totally. But I think the downside is that I-shaped people or employees can sometimes struggle with flexibility. Like, if there are few changes or their job requires new skill, they might find it difficult to adapt.
That's a key challenge. So what's some advice for I-shaped people who want to stay relevant and adaptable? Premi, what do you think?
That's a really good point. I would say that keep your expertise strong, keep developing it, keep honing it, but make sure not to overlook or not to ignore other skills. Even if you're specialized, learning basic soft skills like teamwork, communication, or leadership can also help you stand out. And I think soft skills in general too, I feel like, should be given emphasis and focus on, because within whatever area of work you are in, I think it is absolutely important. So, and one aspect of those soft skills is definitely networking. If you're an I-shaped employee, surround yourself with people from different fields can also give you exposure to new ideas. And again, not to be afraid to branch out.
Okay, next up we have a T-shaped employee. Mia, why don't you take this one?
Yeah, sure. So a T-shaped employee is someone who has deep expertise in one area, just like the I-shaped employee, but also has a broad knowledge in other areas as well. So like the top of the T represents the broad knowledge, while the vertical line is their specialization.
This sounds like the kind of person who's great at collaboration. Like, they can be an expert in marketing, but also know enough about finance and design to work well with those teams or individuals as well.
Exactly. And T-shaped employees are super valuable because they can communicate between different teams instead of just staying in their bubble. They understand other fields well enough to connect ideas and bring people together.
And that's why a lot of companies love hiring T-shaped employees. But what's a potential weakness? What do you guys think?
I think one risk is that they might not be as deeply specialized as an I-shaped employee or not have that much depth, because if they, like, the different times dedicated to certain areas, so they might not have that kind of depth in terms of specialization. Like, if they're strong in one area, but they aren't maybe not the best at that one thing.
True. So I think the best advice for T-shaped employees is to keep deepening their expertise while also maintaining their broad knowledge. Stay curious, keep learning, and really keep building those connections.
Okay, now moving on to V-shaped employees. Frank, what's your take on this one?
A V-shaped employee is like a T-shaped employee, but instead of having just one area of deep expertise, they have two. So picture this letter V. It has two strong vertical lines instead of one.
So instead of just knowing marketing and a little bit of other things, they might be experts in both marketing and data analytics, as an example.
Right, and that makes them super valuable because they can connect ideas across two different disciplines and bring unique insights and contributions to the team. However, the challenge for V-shaped employees is that developing two areas of deep expertise takes time and effort, and they have to make sure they don't get overwhelmed or burnt out.
Yeah, exactly. So our advice would be to prioritize and don't rush. Master one area first, then build expertise in the second. I guess you could say a slow and steady wins the race.
Okay, and finally, we have M-shaped employees. Joseph, what's this shape all about?
An M-shaped employee is like a V-shaped employee, but with multiple deep specializations. They're highly adaptable and can make on different roles. Think of an entrepreneur who's an expert in finance, business strategy, and product development, as an example.
Yeah, it's impressive and also very exhausting all at the same time.
Yeah, I would agree. And it probably is both at the same time, honestly. I think the biggest challenge for M-shaped employees would be that they feel too stretched, or they feel stretched maybe too thin, or struggle with where to focus their energy, especially if they are really good at more than two areas of expertise.
So the best advice for this shaped employee would probably be to learn to prioritize and delegate. You can't do everything alone, even if you have multiple expertise areas.
Okay, great discussion, everybody. As we end this first segment, let's do a quick summary.
I-shaped employees are deep specialists.
T-shaped employees have a specialty plus broad knowledge.
V-shaped employees have two areas of deep expertise.
M-shaped employees are multi-skilled powerhouses.
Understanding these work styles can help you grow in your current situation and your future career, even if you're still just a student. Also, understanding this about yourself can help you work better with others. Now, as we end this first segment, I'll leave you all with this ending question you can ponder and think about. So, which shape do you think you are now, and which do you desire to be in the future? And don't go away. Next up, we continue Legends of the Yucatan Part 4. Stay tuned after this short PSA.
For this PSA, we want to give a shout out to the ICS Human Resources, or HR, department. This department plays a crucial role ensuring that educators, staff, and students have the support that they need to succeed. More than just hiring teachers, HR helps shape school culture, manage faculty and staff relations, and provide essential training and development programs. They help ensure schools maintain a positive and professional environment where all stakeholders feel valued and motivated, with the overall goal of leading students to better learning outcomes. HR also ensures compliance with educational policies and labor laws, protecting both staff and the institution while fostering a safe and ethical workplace. Now, finally, a strong HR team is essential for building a thriving school community, helping to attract and retain talented teachers and other essential staff while reducing high turnover and burnout.
And we are back with our second segment, and we'll continue with part 4 of our story, Legends of the Yucatan. Part 4 is titled The Incident. If you missed parts 1 through 3, you can get caught up by listening to episodes 87, 88, and 89. Legends of the Yucatan is a sequel to our season 2 story, The Secrets of El Dorado. We released last year during episodes 55 through 64 in audio narration. It's also available in book form as a downloadable PDF from our website, or in paperback version on Amazon.com. Just visit studentsincorporated.com to find out more. Now, moving on, Camden will give us a quick recap of Part 3 before we jump into Part 4.
Recapping Part 3, the museum. The students excitedly get ready for the big gala event at the museum, of which the planned unveiling of two special artifacts would be happening. The event was going great until chaos suddenly erupted, leaving everyone in shock. In the midst of the confusion, the story takes an unexpected turn with the introduction of the bad guys. And without further ado, let's jump back into our story, where we join our eclectic group of characters in their continuing adventure.
Hawthorne, still somewhat stunned and confused, keeps his eyes on the row of students who are now laying down on the ground by the chairs they were just sitting in. The students are all intently looking right back at the professor, as if to say, "What should we do? Run? Stay?" It's only been a few moments since the loud bangs and flashes of light went off in the hall, and at this point, the majority of the guests had already funneled out of the main hall through one of the two main entrances towards the back. The professor got up on his knees and peeked up over the chairs and noticed that much of the smoke that was created by the dry ice machines had almost all dissipated. The room was somewhat clear and empty of just about everyone. Chairs were scattered all over the place, and some had been turned over as the guests had left in a panic. There was an eerie silence to the place. Papers and the occasional high heel shoe were scattered around the floor. The students started to get up off the floor as well, talking to each other and trying to comprehend what had just happened. As the professor was now standing up and looking around the room, he noticed Ava walking toward them. She was visibly shook up as she was standing closer to the stage area.
She was also yawning in an attempt to get her ears adjusted to the silence after the shock of the loud bangs.
"Professor, Professor," Lily yelled out, "what should we do?" As Lily was finishing asking Professor Hawthorne that question, there were several dozen security personnel with guns drawn entering the room and moving tactically around the room, followed by several museum staff who still had very panicked looks on their faces.
By this time, Ava had reached her professor and the others, who were now all standing and watching the security team move around the room with slow and deliberate movements. Her hair was somewhat messed up, and the lanyard with her press credentials, which had been hanging on her front, was now hanging on her back. The concussion of the bang and flash had visibly affected her.
As the group started to move out from the row they were standing in, Lily embraced Ava and said, "Are you okay?"
"Yeah, I'm okay. My ears are still ringing and I have a headache, but I'm not hurt. I'm not sure what happened though," Ava responded with an expression of relief on her face.
Tommy and one of the museum staff members walk up to Hawthorne and his group right as Ava reaches them. Their faces also showed disbelief and shock, yet concern for the professor and his students. Before Tommy could say anything, Hawthorne asked in a worried tone, "Anthony was on the stage. Did you see what happened to him?"
Shaking his head, Tommy responds, "He's still down on the stage and the museum's medical team is up there looking after him. We think someone ran up to the stage and hit him on the back of the head right as the flashbang grenade detonated." Tommy continues, "He's awake and talking, but the medical team doesn't want him to move until they finish assessing his conditions. They'll be taking him to the hospital soon."
Wow, flashbang grenades. That explains everyone's panic. "I'm still feeling the effects, and I really hope Anthony's okay." Ava says this as she rubs her ears and the temples on her forehead.
By this time, all the students had gathered around Prof. Tommy and Hawthorne and were all trying to figure out what had just happened.
All of a sudden, Isabel, one of the shy students who doesn't talk a lot, blurts out, "Are we still in danger?"
Max turns to her and says quietly, "I think we're okay now. The security guys are here, and they've got a lot of firepower with them. I mean, look at those guns."
Joe, somewhat excited by all the activities and action, then says, "Looks like Mexico's version of an American SWAT team. I think we're safe now with these guys around."
While the students were talking amongst themselves, Hawthorne and Ava started asking Tommy questions about what had happened. "So was this a heist?" Hawthorne asked point blank. "Did they steal the artifacts?"
"From what we can tell, it looks that way. I mean, both artifacts, the gold mask and the jade jar, were temporarily being held by two museum security team members behind the stage." Tommy continues, "The security guys were about to bring out the two artifacts onto the stage as Anthony was making his announcement. That's when the flashbang went off. I heard the medical team talking about the museum security team members. They're also injured and being attended to behind the stage right now. I think their injuries are more severe."
At that moment, Ava gets a thought and then says out loud, "Hey, I may have captured something on my camera at that moment, actually." Ava continues as she looks at the small screen on the back of her camera and starts cycling through all the photos right up to and during the incident. "I had my camera pointed at the stage and was using my rapid capture function. My camera was taking a photo every half second automatically. Anyway, look at this." Ava turns her camera around so Hawthorne and Tommy can see the viewing screen. There was a sequence of shots that captured the very moment. The photos had captured the flashbangs, were almost all washed out and white. But there was a sequence of three photos right after the bright white flashes. These photos seemed to have captured two figures in all black, holding something. The two figures, somewhat blurring, were exiting out the side door next to the stage, the same door the dancers left from earlier in the program.
"We should probably get one of the police officers over here and show him the images," Hawthorne says.
"No," Tommy says abruptly, "we don't want to do that. Let's get you all out of here and back to the dorms. I'm sure the lead investigators will be here soon, now that the site is secure. I don't really want to be here all night, as there are already enough witnesses they can talk to." Tommy then motioned for the group to follow him out of the large room and then exit out of the museum the same way they came in, the front door. After they get back outside, Tommy walks the group down the block a few meters so they're not blocking the front entrance of the museum. There are several police cars and trucks parked along the street now. Most of the guests who were inside, then ran outside, had mostly dispersed and were in the process of leaving. Some were getting picked up by their drivers, and others were finding their parked cars and driving off. Tommy says to Hawthorne, Ava, and the group, "The van is on the way to pick you up and take you guys to the dorm." He then leans over to Hawthorne and Ava and says quietly, "Don't show those images to anyone else just yet. Trust is a rare commodity in Mexico, especially among the police." He continues, "I'm going back inside to check on Anthony. I'll contact you tomorrow morning and give you an update. So, hold tight this evening and we'll connect in the morning." And with that, Tommy walked back towards the museum.
The van ride back to the university dorms has been eerily silent. The students had barely said a word. They were probably still in shock at what had just occurred. Now back at the dorms and after room checks were complete for both the boys and girls, Hawthorne thought to himself about the remainder of the trip schedule and the other activities that had been meticulously planned. He had spent about a half hour with the guys debriefing the evening's events, and he had asked Ava and Lily to do the same with the girls. The guys had a lot to say, mostly questions that Hawthorne didn't have the answers to. Eventually, the professor made it back to his own room. As he entered the dark and quiet dorm room, he started contemplating what they should do as a group. Should they just return home and count the trip as a loss, only having been there a couple days? Or should they just wait a day or two to see how things shake out? These were questions he couldn't answer as he dropped down on the dorm's flimsy mattress, still dressed in his evening suit, his eyes closed slowly. What a day it had been.
Maria was pacing back and forth in the dimly lit interior room. The old broom factory had many different interior small rooms that used to be used for storage. This particular one was temporarily being used as a rendezvous point. By this time, it was getting late in the evening. She had listened carefully for too long, waiting and wondering when Renata and Carlos would suddenly appear. She knew that eventually, the police would be making their way over to the factory to do a security sweep, especially after what had just happened at the museum next door. Fearing the worst had happened, Maria was about to make a phone call that could seal her fate one way or another when all of a sudden she heard some noise from outside the room. The door swung open quickly and there stood Renata and Carlos sporting very large smiles.
"We got them! We got them both!" Renata yelled out.
"Shut up, Ren," Carlos whispers. "They may hear us. The police are all over the place out there and I'm sure they'll be searching this place soon."
Maria looked them both in the eyes and said, "Where are the pieces?"
"By the side door in black bags," Renata responds with a softer voice.
"Good. Let's go. Wipe the doorknob and anything else you touch with your fingers on our way out. No one can know we were here." Maria says this as she exits the small room and start walking toward the side door where the two black bags are resting on the floor.
"The golden mask is super heavy and larger than what we expected. It doesn't really fit in the bag either. It's quite awkward to carry," Carlos says as he picks up the heavy, larger bag.
Renata responds with a snarky comment. "And that's why you're carrying that one and not me. At least you're good at something." She continues with another snide remark. "You weren't supposed to leave any witnesses behind the stage. Now we may have two security guards to deal with. They're nobodies. Why didn't you just follow the plan?"
The three sneak out the side door, walk down the alley, and get into a waiting black car. Police sirens and patrol car lights can be seen and heard off in the distance. Maria gets in the front passenger seat, looks over at the driver, and nods her head as Carlos and Renata get into the back seat with the black bags. As the car pulls out into the main road and then drives toward the highway, Maria turns around and looks back at Renata and Carlos and asks, "Do we have any witnesses to worry about? Tell me all about the incident. Don't leave out any details. We've got a long drive ahead of us."
Hawthorne's phone goes off. It's loud and annoying, especially when it's unexpected. He looks over at the small digital clock that sits on the small desk in the corner of the room. 7:34 a.m. The professor is surprised he was able to sleep this long. He's usually wide awake by 6 a.m. every morning. "Oh man," the professor says to himself as he rolls out of bed, looking for his phone. "That annoying ringtone, I've got to get that changed." He finds his phone and sees that it's Amanda calling. He takes a deep breath and then hits the accept button.
As soon as the phone connects, Amanda blurts out, "Are you all okay? I just saw the news up here. There was some incident at the museum."
"Hey, Amanda," Hawthorne responds with a low and tired voice. "Yeah, set your mind at ease. We're all okay," Hawthorne continues. "The students are fine, probably still sleeping. We're going to take this day and regroup a bit. We'll wait to connect with Professor Tommy again to discuss our agenda and what's next. Things may shift on our end depending on what he recommends." The professor hangs up with Amanda, hoping that she sets her mind at ease and doesn't worry too much. He's been in sticky situations before. However, the responsibility of having this many students in his group does add another element of complexity. While he's thinking about it, he sends off a quick message to both Ava and Lily, and it reads, "Let's hang tight this morning around here. I'll try to connect with Tommy about our next options. Once I hear from him, we can make a plan. Maybe I'll see you over at breakfast." It's almost noon and the group has just been hanging out around the dorm rooms and the Student Union Center most of the morning. Professor Hawthorne is currently sitting at a small table in the Student Union with Ava and talking about last evening's events. In the middle of their conversation, Hawthorne gets a message on his phone. It's from Prof. Tommy. Professor Hawthorne says, "It's Tommy. Let's see what he has to say." He reads the message out loud so Ava can hear. It reads, "Hope you are all doing okay this morning. I'm heading to the hospital to check on Anthony. He's awake and seems to be doing better. Wondering if you'd like to come."
Ava doesn't hesitate, then says, "Yes. I mean, I know he sent that text to you and I want to go as well, if he's okay with that." Ava holds up her laptop and points to the story she was working on all morning.
Hawthorne replies, "I'm sure he'll be fine if you go. You'll just need to ask permission from Anthony if he wants to be included in your report." Professor Hawthorne types back, "I'm here with Ava and she's wondering if she could accompany us as well. Might be good PR for the museum, you know, spread word of what happened." A few seconds later, Tommy's reply text come through. It reads, "Sure, I'll pick you up in front of the dorm in 30 minutes. See you then."
Tommy Carr pulls up outside the dorm where Professor Hawthorne and Ava are standing and waiting. He rolls down the window and says, "All right, let's go. Sorry I'm a few minutes late. I had to answer a flurry of emails and calls this morning about last night." As Hawthorne and Ava get into Tommy's very small car, Tommy continues, "Hey, this is way off topic, kind of random, but do you mind if we stop by one of my favorite food vendors on the way? They make the best carne asada torta in Mexico City. Hands down, and believe me, I've tried them all." He continues, "I haven't had lunch yet, and I really wanted you to try this place before you all leave to go back. And I think this is probably the only time we can do this."
Hawthorne cracks a smile and looks back at Ava and then says, "One thing you've got to understand about my friend Tommy here is he never passes up an opportunity for a carne asada torta." Professor Hawthorne then looks over at Tommy and continues, "Well, if you ever make your way up to Coloma, I'll take you to my favorite spot now, Ethan's Cafe. I'll introduce you to their famous pastrami sandwich. It'll change your life."
Ava is sitting in the cramped back seat, shaking her head and rolling her eyes as she listens to these old friends compare their favorite local sandwich joints. She also misses Ethan's Cafe. He jumps in the conversation and says, "Prof. Tommy, you've got me intrigued about this high-protein sandwich you're talking about. I've never had one, but there's a first time for everything, right? I mean, maybe I should include this detail in my story as well."
"You've got it, Ava. That's the spirit. I just hope Anthony is up for it because we'll bring him a torta as well. It will cheer him up after what happened last night," Tommy replies.
"Good idea. You know, talking about food can really lighten up a dreadful situation. I'm in a much better mood now. Thanks, Tommy. And I'm hungry," Hawthorne says as he looks out the car window.
Meanwhile, Miranda sits quietly in the waiting area on the third floor of the hospital. She's brought a few small things to hopefully brighten up Anthony's day. A nurse walks up to her and tells her she can go in and see Anthony now that the doctor is done with that morning's assessment. Miranda walks into the room and says, "Hello, Mr. Garcia. It's so good to see you are doing well. You sure gave us a scare last night."
Just at that moment, David walks into the door, looks at Miranda with a surprised look on his face, and then over at Anthony, who is sitting in a chair next to his hospital bed. He says, "Oh hey, I didn't know you had company, Mr. Garcia. but this is a nice surprise. David said this with a smile as he looked at Miranda. He continues, it looks like Miranda and I had the same idea.
Anthony sits up straighter in the chair and responds, wow, thanks for thinking about me, and I appreciate the flowers and gifts you brought. Anthony continues, the doctor was just here and...
Just at that moment, Prof. Tommy, Hawthorne, and Ava walked into the room, which is now quite crowded. Tommy enters the room first while holding a large wrapped carne asada torta and saying, here you go, big guy. We thought this would cheer you up. Tommy then says, oh, so sorry. Didn't you have visitors already? He continues as he gestures towards Miranda and David, who are standing inside the room. Well, hello, Miranda and David. Looks like you had the same idea we had. Looks like our good buddy, Tony, has lots of fans. Tommy often called Anthony by his shorter name sometimes. Tommy then looks over at Anthony to Tony, who is now looking a little uncomfortable and shy with all these visitors packed inside his very small hospital room. Tommy then says, it's good to see you up and alert. So, what's the doctor's order?
Well, they want to keep me for at least two more nights, maybe three. There's a small hairline fracture on the back of my head, and with my concussion, they don't want to take any chances the next few days. He continues as he eyes the sandwich Tommy put down on the table next to his bed. Well, you know how to cheer a guy up.
After about 15 minutes of small talk, and after watching Anthony devour his sandwich, the five visitors, Prof. Tommy, Professor Hawthorne, Ava, Miranda, and David, leaves Anthony's hospital room, walk back out to the waiting area. As they were all awkwardly standing there, wondering what was next and what should be said, Tommy speaks up first. Hey, you know, we still have this schedule for Professor Hawthorne's group, and I'd like to propose a few changes and see what you all think.
Go on, Professor Hawthorne says.
Tommy continues as the other four listens to his idea. The schedule had your group going all the way down to Calakmul, starting tomorrow and then staying there for 2 days. Miranda was going to accompany us down there.
Miranda jumps in. Right, but I assume that trip is canceled after what happened last night.
Hawthorne then adds, my colleague Amanda back in Coloma did receive a notification from the U.S. Embassy about the travel alert being raised.
What if instead we go to Chichen Itza? It's a closer and not as remote. Maybe we should go and enjoy our cultural trip to one of Yucatan's most famous archaeological destinations. He continues, we all know David can't reveal the location of the cenote where the mask was found, but maybe he could accompany us as our resident treasure hunter or treasure finder. And Miranda, we'd love for you to go as well.
David looks around at the others who are looking at him. He then responds, well, I'm technically on the clock with the university and the museum for a few more days. I know it's a change of plans for y'all, but I'm okay with it.
Miranda then responds, I think it's a good idea. I wouldn't feel comfortable going to Calakmul now anyway, not after what happened last night. That location can be a little risky even in the best of times. And I'd be up for going with you and David to Chichen Itza. There's plenty to see and do there from an academic point of view as well.
Well, Tommy, you know me. I'm along for the ride, and if we can salvage the remainder of this trip this way, then I'm all for it. Hawthorne says as he glances over at Ava. He then continues, what about you? Would you be up for that, changing the destination of our field expedition?
Ava fires back without hesitation. Of course I'm in. I go where the story leads, and right now that sounds like the place Professor Tommy is suggesting. So, what next then?
Alright, don't worry about the travel changes. The university will rearrange the travel plans for all of us and get that sorted out by tomorrow's morning. They can make it happen pretty quickly. You'll all just be ready to fly out tomorrow morning, sometimes before 9 a.m. Once I get an exact time, I'll let you know. Tommy looks at Miranda and David, and then says, you can just meet us at the airport after you hear back from me about our time of the departure. I'll send that information later this evening to you.
Renata could hear her aunt arguing with two guys in the next room. The four of them, Aunt Maria, her brother Carlos, the driver, and her had been hiding out in a dirty old rundown safe house outside the city of Merida for the better part of the morning. They were all tired from the long drive through the night and were a little cranky as to why the cartel members showed up late and were now changing some of the details about their previously agreed upon deal. She could hear it in her aunt's voice from the next room that things were not going very well. Renata looks at Carlos and mumbles, man, I knew Aunt Maria shouldn't have trusted these guys. They're a bunch of losers. They never do their own dirty work.
Carlos, who hadn't really been paying attention to the loud arguing from the next room, looks over at Renata and responds, I hate doing this type of work anyway. Why can't we just find something different to do? Something honest.
Renata snaps back. Something honest? She laughs and continues. Are you kidding me? That train has left the station, little brother, and ain't coming back. This is our family's line of work, and nothing we do can change that. So don't be naive and stupid. Just do what we say, and maybe someday you can be rich and then just disappear. At least that's what I'm hoping for.
Carlos mumbles back a response. Well, it didn't work out for Mom, did it?
Renata responds. You didn't even really know her anyway. You were too young. Renata continues. I watched Mom struggle to make ends meet, and she was just trying to take care of us the best she knew how to.
I suppose, but she'd probably still be with us today if she had found a different type of work, honest work. Carlos continues, I'm just saying, if Aunt Maria keeps making deals with the cartel and then things go bad, like they did for Mom, they'll just erase us like they did her.
At that moment, Maria bursts through the door and into the room where Renata and Carlos were sitting and says, I hate working with a cartel, she continues. They're only going to pay us half of what they said earlier unless we give them something more.
Renata then says, what do you mean something more? We got them both artifacts.
Keep your voice down. They're on the phone with the big boss in the other room. Maria says to Renata, she continues, they'll want to know the location where the golden mask was found because they believe there's more there, maybe gold or whatever. Then once they know the location and it's confirmed, we get paid the remainder of what they owe us.
That's not fair, Carlos says.
Well, they're the ones holding the guns and our payout. If you want to be done with this lifestyle, then we need to do this. Otherwise, we're stuck, Maria says. She continues, we've got to give up the only leverage we have left now to make this happen. Maria says this as she looks out the small half-broken window that's behind where Renata and Carlos are sitting. She lifts up her hand and points her finger at the man who is calmly sitting in the driver's side seat of the car they came here last night in. She then says, that guy there, our driver, well, there's more to him than you know.
Meanwhile, the plane that Professor Hawthorne and the others are on has landed at Merida's regional airport. It was a short flight from Mexico City, and it was already mid-morning. Merida is a larger city as compared to others in this part of the Yucatan. The famous Chichen Itza ruins are only an hour and a half car ride from the city center. The incident at the gala event two nights ago feels like it happened a week ago. Having the extra day yesterday to rest, debrief, and then go see Anthony at the hospital helped ease the professor's mind in regards to changing the schedule and bringing along the students. They were now all here, all the students, Ava, Lily, Prof. Tommy, and their very own special field guides, Miranda and David. It felt good to be out of Mexico City, and the group was quite excited to have celebrity guests Miranda and David with them. Hawthorne thought to himself as they were all exiting the small Merida airport together and in good spirits, all right, this is like a big, fun field trip. What could go wrong? The worst is behind us.
And that ends part four. Stay tuned for next week as we bring part 5 in our continuing story called The Legends of the Yucatan.
As we end this episode, let's not forget to answer the question, what shape is your working style? I, T, V, or M? And stay tuned for our next episode as we look at the power of good design with a local artist who knows a thing or two about good design. We'll also be continuing our adventure story. And as always, this podcast would not be possible without the hard work and support of our international student production team.
All music and sound effects are courtesy of Pixabay.com, a vibrant community of creatives, sharing copyright-free images, videos, and music.
And we are signing off until next time. We are Students Incorporated, because your voice matters.